So helping somebody in need and helping somebody feel better physically, mentally, whatever it might be, those are things that I feel are my obligation in life, but also something that fulfills me more than any material or possession ever will.
Welcome back to What's Next with Eric Wood, and I'm excited to have my good friend and world-renowned ophthalmologist, Dr. Ephraim Atwell, on the podcast today. Dr. Atwell did my LASIK surgery in Buffalo in 2016, which changed my life dramatically for the better. Since then, we've connected on a bunch of different things, and I would say mostly through charity functions in Western New York, as Ephraim is about as generous as anybody that I've come across. And with that, I'd like to welcome him to the podcast. Ephraim, welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you so much for having me, Eric. It's a real honor to be here.
Yeah, always a pleasure. So let's start here, and we'll talk about my LASIK surgery back in the day. And it's kind of funny how I got there. So sure. With the bills, if you went to Dr. Atwell, you could get your LASIK eye surgery paid for by the bills. So I had always wanted to do that. You had to wear glasses for 2 weeks prior to the surgery, or at least a week. And generally during the season, that never worked. And then after the season, we'd head back to Louisville. Sure. Well, in 2016, I break my leg. So I decide, okay, now is the time that I'm going to get this LASIK surgery. And I had battled contacts for years. I had very dry eyes. So at times I could just blink out a contact, yeah, but I could usually feel it coming. It actually happened to me during a game one time. We were playing against what used to be the Washington Redskins at the time, but we were playing in Washington and I lost a contact during a preseason game. Well, my gloves are taped on. The trainers couldn't get it in. So I played about a half of a game and I have like 2200 vision prior to surgery. So I cannot see. Yeah. So I'm trying to read defenses. And if I have to look to my left, I can't even hardly see if there's a safety coming down there or not. And so after that, I decided as soon as I can, I'm going to get this done. So I break my leg in 2016. So I say, okay, this is a perfect time to get LASIK. Whether that was a perfect time or not is to be determined. So I crutch in, I'm non-weight bearing after a broken leg surgery, crutch into your office, get the surgery done, and get the procedure done. And then we get home. Well, I can't hardly see. There's snow on the ground. It's so bright outside. And I'm trying to get upstairs to my bed at the house. And my wife's like, if you fall backwards down these stairs, it's not going to be good for either of us because I'm not going to be able to hold you. Either way, I say it all the time on the broadcast, and not just because we do some work together, but you literally changed my life. I cannot imagine broadcasting and staring at the field continuously with the dry eyes that I had and having to battle those contacts continuously. And my eyes were never as good as they are now, even with the contacts. So you changed my life for the better.
Sure.
And I thank you for it.
Well, thank you for the kind words, Eric. Yeah, it was our pleasure. I remember that day. I remember you coming on the crutches. I remember your cast. And, you know, I can only imagine what your wife must have felt that day because, I mean, you being, 6'4", what was your playing weight at the time?
Yeah, I was about 310 at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was a great day, though. And obviously, you know, we were super excited to take care of you. And, you know, you had such a great career here in Buffalo, and it was a real honor to do it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So let's start here with kind of your story and your journey in your career path. Your father, Amar, started Atwell Eye Care in the 1980s. So over 40 years ago, you guys have been in practice. Was it always your goal and dream to become an ophthalmologist yourself and take over the business?
Well, you know, it's an interesting story. I think when I was a kid, you know, jokingly, maybe not so much jokingly, my mother would, you know, wake me up in the morning and say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And if I said anything other than doctor, I got a little tap on the back of the head. So, you know, it was always a very, very much push towards medicine. My mother was a nurse as well here locally at ECMC. My parents wanted me to be a physician. Obviously, I emulated my father. I looked up to him so much that, you know, wanting to be an ophthalmologist was certainly, you know, top of the list. But, you know, his guidance to me was, you know, do whatever makes you happiest and most fulfilled and you'll be successful and I'll be proud of you. So ultimately I chose ophthalmology. Maybe it's a genetic thing that I think there's a high rate of succession among children whose parents are ophthalmologists. They likely become ophthalmologists as well. So yeah, it's something about the field, you know, it's surgical, it's clinical, good hours, not tons of emergencies. You know, you have, you know, like patients like you who come in and you're able to change their lives so quickly. So it's a real honor to be able to do that, and to do it in an environment where everything's rather laid back in medicine is really quite fun.
Yeah, that's cool. And it's got to be fulfilling when you have so many success stories like mine, where you literally change someone's life. And so, yeah, that's got to be a very fulfilling career path. I know there's a ton of business owners, highly successful people that tune into this podcast. And a lot of times they want to know about maybe the challenges and how you overcame them in growing the business like you have, because Atwell Eye Care is a staple in Western New York. I don't know of literally another eye care center up there. And so what were maybe some challenges in building it to how you have now?
Well, it's interesting trying to actually isolate one from the other. I mean, I think any business owner will tell you that every day when you walk in the door, there's, you know, an ever-growing list of issues that you have to contend with. Every day we're facing, reimbursement issues, staffing issues, especially after the pandemic. Just the daily operations and making sure that your staff feels motivated and excited to be there, knowing that, you know, at least sharing your ethos and your drive to helping people. That's not always translated to the staff. And sometimes, you know, we have events with our staff and meetings with the staff to try to convey that information to them, just to kind of reinvigorate the morale within the center. I think the biggest challenge since COVID is pretty much the thing you've been hearing from most business owners, is the staffing issue. Mm. That's been challenging because not only is there Atwell Eye Care, but there's also Buffalo Ambulatory Surgery Center. Anybody in medicine will tell you right now, it's challenging because, wages go up and cost of living goes up, and trying to balance yourself sufficiently to keep you in the black is, you know, can often be a challenge, especially when reimbursements are going down every year. So, I'm very lucky, to be quite honest with you, to be surrounded by an incredible support staff. My CEO, Deborah Davis, is so good. In fact, she's the only American Society of Ophthalmic Administrators CEO or president for 2 years running. So she's been an invaluable resource for us. We've had incredible help from human resources levels to even the people that we partner with throughout the community. So, I think that the best piece of advice I got from my father when I first came back to Buffalo was, if you're making decisions based on patient care and you're doing the right thing for the patient, you're always going to be doing the right thing. And so I try to keep that, forefront in my thought process when it comes to what decisions we make. If it's going to benefit the patient, then that's usually the direction I head into, regardless of whatever financial gain it might be. I don't even know what we charge for LASIK, for instance. I try to stay out of, reimbursements and money as much as we possibly can, just because it's something that I feel, I don't think I'd be colored by it, but I don't want to experience having to be challenged to make a decision otherwise. So keeping the patient's health and vision as a priority is, I think, how we've managed to stay successful. And I think that good businesses think about their clients first and kind of work backwards from there.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that applies to literally any industry you're in. Keep the customers first, worry about a great experience. Well, then they're going to refer people, they're going to come back, and you're going to have long-term success. Yeah. That's great stuff. We talked yesterday and you were telling me, and I didn't even know about this. I've never even heard about this. You're literally setting the market in setting a new standard in this field, in this cosmetic eye care now. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, I've, throughout my career, I've always been, I guess, brainstorming different ideas, and, I've had notebooks, stacks and piles of notebooks from, I went to medical school at 18. So from 18 years on, I've been collecting these notebooks of ideas. And eventually got to a point where I said to myself, I need to start actually doing something with these notebooks. There's so many great ideas. And so many of those ideas had come to fruition, a decade later and becoming wildly successful. So I decided to collate a lot of the kind of the low hanging fruit from these ideas. And a lot of them, consistently were kind of challenges being unmet in my specialty specifically. There's something about ophthalmology for some reason. It's a brilliant field, and there's brilliant people that go into it. And a lot of the real innovations in medicine have come from ophthalmology. But when it comes to all of the really great advances that have been helping patients worldwide in general health and medicine, there tends to be a lag between that and ophthalmology. And so what I've been trying to do with this company I created called Omega. Omega's got three branches. We do kind of pharmaceutical and medical device. We do some biologic stuff, which means that are you familiar with Connect Life here in Western New York?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm the medical director for the eye and tissue department. And so we deal with a lot with human transplant tissue and that kind of thing. So dealing with human transplant tissue and how can we make that process more effective and safer for our transplant patients. As a cornea surgeon, that's something that I certainly hold very near to my heart. Embracing all of the deficits that currently exist, any frustrations that I might have in the operating room, any frustrations I might experience when I'm seeing a patient in the clinic, I try to take those ideas and build a foundation for this new company. And interestingly enough, like you said, with your prior to your LASIK, your dry eyes and your contacts was such a difficult thing to manage. It's the number one diagnosis in our clinic, far away. And so dry eye is one of those things that everyone's starting to really talk about, so much in fact that we've actually started a clinic, a dry eye clinic at Atwell Eye Care. So addressing dry eye on a national level, addressing dry eye for our patients, what can we do? What kind of thought processes have been ignored that could potentially help people? Things that have been done in medicine in other areas for the last decade that we might not be utilizing in ophthalmology because we as ophthalmologists are kind of insulated from the rest of medicine. You know, we kind of exist in our own world, and you know, other doctors, cardiologists don't really understand the eye, and a lot of times, ophthalmologists don't really understand the heart. So it's one of those things where you really kind of have to get your feet wet and go digging for solutions to things that that you can't find. And so this thought process of evaluating new technologies and new modalities in medicine and integrating them into ophthalmology and how they can help our dry eye patients. So the cosmetic thing kind of grew out of really a dry eye mentality, and how are women and users of makeup suffering from just applications of their makeup. And, you know, the cost of beauty can be pretty high sometimes. And so we're trying to ease that burden for a lot of our patients and people worldwide.
Yeah, that's incredible. And there's going to be a lot of people affected positively by that. And it's really cool that you're kind of setting the standard in your field and kind of first to market there, and that it's coming out of Western New York. That's really cool. Speaking of Western New York, did you grow up a Bills fan?
Oh yeah. Yeah. My father worked very hard, and one of the few things that we did consistently as father and son was go to Bills games. So every Sunday he'd wake us up, and we had end zone seats at the time. And that was during the quote unquote glory years of being a Bills fan, you know, in the 90s. And it was a lot of fun. And obviously, you know, being in the end zone as a kid is a lot of fun. A lot of characters down there at the time. And we had a lot of fun. My father was actually the team ophthalmologist back then as well. So he helped, he sponsored the Jills. He worked with the Bills. He did a lot of work with the team back then too.
That's cool. What's a normal game day like for you now? I know you're not in the end zone still. I know you've upgraded since. What's a normal game day like?
You know, every year it gets less and less exciting. I have three beautiful children. And getting them safely into the stadium is my number one priority. So tailgating becomes less of a concern these days. Getting to the game somewhere around 12 o'clock is pretty much where I aim for.
Yeah, unless Kate and her team have us filming something on the field, or I knew you were big time in Buffalo when you got field access before the game for us to do a photo shoot for Atwell Eye Care, and nobody gets on the field like that before the game. So I knew that you had some pull around the organization.
We've had a good relationship with the Bills, and I've been lucky to be working with the team for like the last 10 years. So I don't call in favors often. So I feel like, you know, I'm nobody in Buffalo, and you're a legend here in Buffalo. So the fact that I was doing it for you, I think, was probably the impetus for them to be to oblige us.
Well, I appreciate that humility. And speaking of humility, you consistently give back to the community. I mentioned in the intro that most of our interactions over the years are generally at charity events where we're both supporting some worthy cause around Western New York. What drives you to be so philanthropic and give back so much to the community?
I think the same reason why I became a physician in the first place, this kind of almost overwhelming desire to help people. And it's not necessarily limited to my vocation, whether it's, you know, even helping somebody across the street or, helping the community out in events. I was raised with a philosophy. My family is Sikh, and there's a concept called seva, which is a really beautiful and simple concept. I think a lot of, religious faiths have this mentality of love thy neighbor. And it's very similar to that. The idea is that if the number one way to pray to God, it might not necessarily be on your knees next to your bed, but might be loving his children and taking care of his children. So helping somebody in need and helping somebody feel better physically, mentally, whatever it might be, those are things that I feel are my obligation in life, but also something that fulfills me more than any material or possession ever will.
Yeah. And you walk the walk there. I mean, you've done work with Vons Vision. You've done work with veterans. You have Operation Sight. You've done so much around the community. And then you also have all the dollars that you've put towards plenty of worthy causes in all the events I've seen you at. I know you've partnered up with Von and his Vons Vision campaign. And we don't necessarily have to talk specifically about that. I just want to know, and I want you to relate to the listeners, because I know this. How cool is Von Miller?
he's a lot like you, I'll tell you. I mean, you both walk in the room and it's a presence. I mean, you're both very, very, you know, physically impressive people. But not only that, but there's an energy that both of you have. And I think that, you know, working with you over the years is, you know, every time I see you, it's almost a little overwhelming, because you do have this really positive, wonderful energy. And I think Von has that same kind of energy as well. And, you know, I love the fact that, you know, both of you have great organizations that are doing great works in the community. And, you know, it's when Von first came to Buffalo, I remember seeing, I think he was with the Broncos at the time, but I remember seeing a special about him and his glasses and how obsessed he was with his eyewear. So we contacted his team. I had no idea Von's Vision existed, frankly, but I said, you know, let's figure out if we can do something here locally in Buffalo. And come to find out, he has this great organization that he's kind of had chapters set up throughout his career in Dallas, I believe there's one in Denver, there's one. And I said, well, let's start one in Buffalo and try to help the kids here that aren't functioning in school or athletics, and try to get them to get some glasses and just be part of society. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun to work with Von and the organization. They've been incredibly committed to helping out the Western New York community, which is near and dear to my heart for sure.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I appreciate those kind remarks as well. I would say the same about you. For those that have not met Ephraim, he has a presence about him as well. He is big in stature. Like myself, he likes to at least rock two buttons unbuttoned. We're bigger chested dudes. That's how I roll too, brother. That's how I roll too. All right. All right. Well, I got to circle back on one thing before we move forward. How'd you get into med school at 18, besides being extremely smart?
Okay. Yeah, I don't know about extremely smart, but certainly I had a vision. So my father, in the rest of the world, typically medical school is part of a more vocational training mentality. So here in the US, you go to college and then you go to your vocational training, med school, law school, whatever it might be, and keep acquiring your MBA. So in India, where my father went, I always thought it was super cool that he started medical school when he graduated from high school. So I went to high school here in at Nichols High School in Buffalo, New York, graduated in 96. And then I kind of had this mentality that I was going to be going, I wanted to go to India. I kind of understood at a younger age that my education wasn't limited to the books that I was going to read, that I wanted to experience the world and live somewhere else. And just kind of while I had the opportunity before I had a family to experience what the rest of the world had to offer, living in different cultures, et cetera. And my father was doing a lot of, he was doing charity mission trips to Eastern Europe, specifically to Poland. And he was great as a role model because he always ensured that I was with him on all of these things. So it was part of my education as a kid was, it wasn't just, oh, dad's going to church right now, or dad's going to go help some people in Europe. He was like, no, you're coming with me. This is going to be part of who you are.
Love
And
that.
he shared that ethos with me. And he, so, you know, I, we did four, four, I have four mission trips to Eastern Europe, to Poland. And on one of the trips, we were in Krakow, and we learned about this medical school in Krakow. And you know, there's a whole really elaborate story that involves the Pope, and he matriculated at the same school, and there was inspiration from the Pope to go to the same school. So it really felt like divine intervention. So I kind of said, well, listen, I have a good understanding of Indian culture and of my roots. So let me broaden my horizons and go to Europe instead and try to learn about this culture and acquire my MD at the same time. So that's what I ended up doing. At 18, I moved to Krakow, much to the chagrin of my high school counselors, who thought that I was crazy at the time. I think it's become a little bit more commonplace to go to Europe for medical school, but certainly at 18, it was considered a very new concept at the time.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. And it seems like the way we do it, where you have to go get a full degree and then you spend 6, 8, however many years in med school, you can really speed that process up. You got to be bold enough to move across the pond. But to me, that makes a lot more sense to me. And so, yeah, that's really neat and way to be
Well, you
bold
know,
and
I
do
think the other
that.
thing too is you know, I think a lot of people, I don't want to say they waste their time in college, but there's certainly an element. And I think for myself, I think I had the foresight to know that if I had gone to college, I might have been one of those people that wasted a lot of time and maybe didn't, maybe got
Right.
sidetracked and lost my compass. So I said, let me just kind of forego all of that and just go right there. Anyway, I mean, it wasn't like I was suffering. I was living in Krakow, in this absolutely gorgeous Renaissance town in, you know, in Eastern Europe, and had an absolute blast living there. So I was not suffering by any means. It was a really glorious experience, and Poland is a beautiful country. So I had a great
Yeah,
time.
that's fascinating to me. I learned so much each and every time I bring someone on the podcast, and I'm certainly learning a lot here today. Tell me about your farm that you have.
Okay. So I have my family and I, my uncle and I started a farm in Niagara County in 2005. When I had come back from medical school, I took a little bit of time off, and in that time off, I felt like I needed to do something. So I was like, all right, well, I know I'm going to go into medicine. I know I at this point in my career, I knew I wanted to do ophthalmology, but I also kind of wanted to set some things in place. So my uncle and I got this kind of crazy idea to start a farm in Western New York. We were driving around one day, and we noticed all this farmland for sale in Niagara County. So we bought 250 acres of apple orchard out there, and we have since grown the farm now to just around 4,000 acres. The farm's still running. It's segued our lives in Niagara County into several other things. So now my uncle lives here permanently. He has a beautiful family out in Niagara County. We have since acquired Ransomville Speedway. So this is almost our 10th year of owning and running Ransomville Speedway, which is a half-mile oval dirt track out in Niagara County, which is an absolute blast if you're free on a Friday night. So yeah, we've been pretty integrated within the Niagara County community for a decade now, and for almost 20 years actually, since 2005. Getting old happens quick, doesn't it? Yeah, so 20 years we've been in Niagara County, and we've had a really, really great time. The farm has now been transferred into corn and soybeans, so we don't do apples like when we bought it. So we do corn and soybeans for the most part, and we're always looking to transition into different things. My uncle and I kind of romanticized the idea of owning a cattle farm. I love steak, and eating steak is one of my favorite things in the world. So we'll be thinking about maybe a cattle farm in the near future.
I love that. You're an absolute savant. Tell me about this dirt track. Do I get to get in the cars, or are we just watching the cars go around?
I don't know if you and I would fit in the cars.
Gotcha.
These things are super tight. I mean, they're super tight. In fact, we do have track days occasionally where people can get into the cars and take them around. It looks claustrophobic for the smaller guys. So, if you ever watched that Netflix show, the F1 racing show, I mean, these guys are not very big guys that get in those cars. They're almost like mechanical jockeys, you know, in a way.
Right.
They just, you know, not to say that the drivers that are doing it are tiny people or anything like that, but it's a tight fit in there.
Yeah. Okay. Noted. We'll just watch then. We'll just watch. That sounds better. All right. On April 8th,
it's a lot of fun to watch, trust me.
Oh, I guarantee it. All right. So on April 8th, we have a big time event coming up. Really around the world, but Buffalo is one of the top cities in the entire country. And there's a number of them. You can find those on the internet, but Buffalo is one of the top cities to be able to watch the solar eclipse. And so you and your team are going to do an event out at Highmark Stadium. Talk about this event. Maybe describe first what people are going to see with this solar eclipse, and then tell us about the event.
Sure. Yeah. So the last solar eclipse in Western New York, total solar eclipse, was 1925. So it's been a long time, and it's going to be another 100 years before this thing comes again. But a solar eclipse is essentially when the moon is orbiting right in front of the sun. And it's a really beautiful and a fantastic celestial phenomenon, but it could also be a fairly dangerous one as well. So as an ophthalmologist, it's something that we've always been taught to be very cautious of for our patients, because it doesn't feel as though, like, normally people aren't looking at the sun. They've been told their whole lives, don't ever look at the sun. There's a brightness element to it that kind of prohibits you naturally from looking at the sun. When it comes to a total solar eclipse, though, there's so much blackout to the sun that people feel like they can still look at it and look at the ring that's occurring around the moon. And that is where it is actually most dangerous, because you end up staring at it and you can develop a situation called solar retinopathy, which is a really devastating issue that occurs within the retina. Imagine everything that you look at for the rest of your life is going to have a big thumbprint on it, because it burns the center of the retina and the cells just can't heal themselves. So, and it doesn't take long for this to happen. Within seconds, you can develop solar retinopathy. So that's why you see a lot of people selling solar sunglasses, the high rated, they're almost, you put them on and you can't see anything through them, because it is so intense, the light that comes through it. You'll still be able to see it through the glasses, but you absolutely should not be looking at it with the naked eye. So we're kind of closely linked to this experience here in Western New York, not only in due to its proximity for us, but as ophthalmologists, is something we're trying to safeguard the public and get the word out there that this is something you had to really protect yourself from. So yeah, we're doing this this event at Highmark. Super excited about it. April 8th, the event is, I believe, from 1 or 2 o'clock on till the end of the event. The apex of the eclipse is going to be somewhere around 3:30 here in Western New York, 3:20, 3:30, something like that. And the event is great. We're charging $25 a ticket. Kids under 2 are free, and all the proceeds from the ticket sales and from the event are going to benefit Jim Kelly's Kelly for Kids Foundation. So it's a great way to see the event. It's a super unique way to experience Highmark Stadium. We're going to have access to the club levels and to the field as well. We're going to have live music, and there's going to be a whole bunch of activities for the kids to do as well. You'll get a free pair of solar glasses by coming to the event. But yeah, I mean, what a cool way to see it, that in our beloved, you know, a stadium where the Bills play, and, you know, get to see the eclipse and do it on the field or from the stands. It's going to be a really special experience. I'm very excited.
That will be cool. And to experience something that only happens once every 100 years with a huge group of people, yeah, fairly closely aligned because of their probable fandom of the Bills, should be a really awesome day. I just got a few more for you, yeah, maybe some quicker hitters. What's your favorite wing? So I know you like steak, but what's your favorite wing spot in Buffalo?
For me, it's gotta be Gabriel's Gate. There's something about it. I live right next to Delaware Park. I like the area down here. I just like the energy. Gabriel's Gray is great. It's just a really kind of old school Buffalo environment. The wings are always great. They take a little long to get to you sometimes, but they're fantastic.
Yeah, that allows you to have a couple beverages and maybe indulge in some of their other food down there before the wings come as well. Yeah. What's your favorite place in Buffalo to go grab a steak?
You know, my go-to restaurant in Buffalo is Hutch's. Again, it's just one of those, I've never had a bad meal there. It's walking distance from my house. It's a great environment. They always have great music playing. It's like old school 90s hip hop and jazz and old Motown blues. And it's just something perfect about that environment that I just absolutely align with on a lot of levels. But yeah, I go to Hutch's for the most part. We're fortunate in Buffalo to have a lot of really great places. I'm going tonight to Brad's Hill. That's Chef Darren Bryan's place. That's a fantastic restaurant as well. So yeah, there's a lot of really fun places to go.
There is. And to me, it's amazing in Buffalo how many chef-owned places there are to where the chef comes out. Like when you go to Hutch's, Hutch is going to come out likely and check to make sure you're having a good experience. Oh, yeah. Maybe not on a Friday and Saturday when they're super slammed, but he's going to do his best to do it. And yeah, you want to talk about a guy that's extremely generous. We just did one of our foundation dinners up there at Hutch's recently. And so love going in there. Some of the best food in town. But Buffalo is spoiled with the amount of good food that they have. I want to ask you this just because you're so well traveled with your upbringing, your college experience, and even now, what's your favorite place to travel to?
Ooh. The older I get, the closer it gets to my bedroom. I'll tell you that. I'll tell you what. The older I get, the more it becomes about the people I'm with. I think that, you know, if you're with the right people, you could be absolutely anywhere and have a really enjoyable experience. I'd have to say that as long as I'm with great people, then I'm good. But I have been very fortunate to travel around. There's some great cities that I was just in Laguna Beach a couple weekends ago for a photo shoot. I had an absolutely beautiful time there. Barcelona has been fantastic. Places in Florida, your hometown in Nashville is an absolutely amazing city. Again, these are, you know, places that thrive on the interaction with other people. So I think that's probably why I like them so much. I've had great experiences there.
Yeah, that's great. I like what you said about the people you're with. I can often reiterate that as well. It's more about who you're with than necessarily the scenery or the location. That's really well said. All right, last one from me. This is What's Next with Eric Wood. What's next for Dr. Ephraim Atwell? What's coming down the line that's got you excited in life?
The fact that I'm not necessarily sure what's next is probably the fun part, but that I'm still able to curate it. So I know that I have a 10-year goal vision for where I want my career to be. And I think the exciting part, you know, they say it's not the destination, it's the journey that's the most fun. I think that the journey is what I'm most looking forward to. Kind of sharing that experience with my children as well, kind of carrying on that mentality that my father kind of donated to me so generously, that, you know, it might be easier to do it without them, but it's so much better to do it with them, and make sure that they kind of understand that, you know, there is nothing in life that's free. There's nothing worth having that doesn't come with a great deal of work. But the work can be so much fun and so rewarding, helping people sitting down and brainstorming through ideas. I mean, I get more excited from that than I do, frankly, from even going to events and to all these other things. I feel like I said, I feel like the journey is what's most exciting for me, and sharing that with my family is certainly top of
mind. Yeah, that's likely a sign that you're doing something that is very fulfilling in life, that you're surrounding yourself with great people. And one of my biggest takeaways from this podcast will be when you talked earlier about the experiences you had traveling with your dad, and those weren't just limited to himself with his travel. He brought you along with him, and the impact that that had on you and ended up kind of being the source of your college choice and your career trajectory. And so I will implement that in time with my 6 and 8 year old as it becomes more applicable. I actually brought my daughter for the first time to a speaking event with me this week. It was an FCA event in town, a smaller speaking gig, but she got to experience it. She had a really good time. She said she had an absolute blast. And so I have to include them a lot more. Dr. Atwal, always a pleasure spending time with you. Thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to pour into me and the listeners. So thank you very much, brother.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And it was an absolute pleasure to be out here. And I look forward to working with you in the future. And next time you're in town, we gotta go grab dinner together for sure.
Yep, no doubt about it.